Go behind the wheel and under the hood on everything automotive with high-speed stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Scott Benjamin, the auto editor here at HowStuffWorks.com.
The deuce.
And the deuce. I've been apparently... Oil can?
Oil can was the last one, yeah.
Or alternately chops.
I like chops. I think I like... Yeah. I almost like to go with the full pork chop on that one, though.
It's cool. It makes me feel like I have a... You remember that song Convoy by C.W. McCall? Yeah. I feel like I'm in...
You've got a handle.
Yeah, I've got a handle.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Yeah,
like rubber duck.
I'm warning people about the bears.
Yeah.
But all that aside, as much as I'm enjoying this nickname thing, and you know what? We should ask listeners to suggest some nicknames, too.
Yeah, I like oil can.
I like oil can, actually.
I think there's just a ring to Ben Porkchop Bolin.
There's, you know, I've been called that before. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I have, but only by you.
Yeah, okay. But, that was just a couple weeks ago.
But the thing, you know, I still don't think we're there with the nickname The Deuce because that it has the in front of it.
Yeah.
And it's hard to refer to in conversation.
Yeah.
But let me catch up real quick before we get into this.
Okay.
You remember earlier we had to play a little bit of the opposite of Devil's Advocate, and we had to give five reasons to buy a hybrid car based on an excellent article written by your friend of mine, John Fuller, and we stayed away from some of the negative stuff, but we did promise a sequel.
Yeah, and the sequel is here. We're going to do five reasons to not buy a hybrid today, and this is by another writer, a different writer, which I find kind of interesting, so that John didn't write both articles, you know, five reasons to buy and five reasons to not buy.
Oh, yeah.
This one's by Kristen Hallgeisler, and she's a freelance writer that writes for us often here on the Auto Channel.
Mm-hmm.
She has a little different take on this as far as, you know, the countdown of reasons why not to. They don't exactly mirror John's reasons, you know, five reasons to buy. It's not an exact, back and forth on every issue. So,
yeah.
A lot of these are in a different order, but you'll see some of the same themes come back up.
And it's an interesting comparison because both of these, you know, if you pay attention to the titles, both of these are just naming factors for or against buying a hybrid. Neither of these have something like buy a hybrid now or never buy a hybrid.
Oh, so no, this is just a point counterpoint.
Just things to consider.
Mm-hmm.
All right, sure. let's start off small. You want to go from number five?
Let's do it.
All right.
All right, number five. You're making a chugging motion with your hands like a train.
Cool. I'm enjoying this. I'm into it. I've got so much coffee in my system right now.
All right, let's start off with number five here. Higher initial cost.
It is too true.
Higher
all
initial
too
cost.
True.
Now, they're several thousand dollars more than a conventional version of the same car. So you do pay a premium up front for a hybrid vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you might say that there's federal tax credits. We talked about that in the last episode as well, that you can get these $3,400 tax credits or up to $3,400, right? But a lot of those have already gone away, which I had mentioned. Mm-hmm. And that goes away after the 60,000th vehicle has been sold of that make and model.
And that started in 2006.
Correct.
And the popular models have sold well past that number.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, they're selling, like, I want to guess in the millions at this point.
Sure.
So they're long beyond the federal tax credit for some models. I'm sure if you search around, you're going to find that some that, you know, you still can get that $3,400 back, but or maybe, you know, slightly less on that sliding scale that I mentioned. But yeah, if you're going just for the federal tax credit or trying to just buy a cheap car to begin with, cheap new car, hybrid might not be the way to go because you do pay that premium up front.
Yep.
So, all right, that's number five.
And that I don't know where the rest of these are going because that's a pretty big deal to me.
Yeah, the next one kind of ties into that exactly. Recouping that cost. So recouping the extra cost, because a lot of people when they buy a hybrid, they say, well, I'll make it up at the fuel pump, right?
Yeah. Right away, next week, I am going to make $3,000, even if I didn't spend that much in gas to begin with. I'm sorry.
Very nice. I was going to let you go as long as you wanted
no,
to.
No, I think we've done enough damage here.
The rest of the episode like that.
Because I'm not that guy.
Okay.
All right.
That's the coffee speaking.
That is the coffee price.
All right. So people say they're going to make it up at the pump.
Sure.
Not likely.
Well, possible.
It's possible. but it does take several years in many cases just to break even.
Yeah.
And you know, that's including normal maintenance and everything else mm-hmm. that it goes along with owning a car, insurance and everything, the payments. Mm-hmm. But to make it up strictly in fuel cost, which a lot of people have this idea that they're going to make it up,
sure,
maybe even in the same year. That's not the case, and fuel prices would have to be ridiculously high in order to make it up, because when fuel prices increase, the amount of time it takes to make the money back does come down. But like right now, you know, a lot of people, let's say back in summer of 2008, mm-hmm. fuel prices were up above $4 a gallon in a lot of places. Then it was a lot easier to figure that, you know, hey, I'll make a lot of money if I buy a hybrid and I get two times the average of what I'm getting now in my car.
Right.
You know, the savings add up quickly in that case. Now that prices have adjusted back down to, I mean, you're probably $2.50 a gallon, $2.60 a gallon.
Sure.
You can see where it would take an awful lot longer to make up that difference in when you're talking thousands of dollars, mm-hmm. Just saving whatever that amount would be. I don't have all the numbers in front of me because I didn't figure out a whole, you know.
I mean, the concept is the important part here, and I completely agree.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one interesting argument somebody could make as a counterpoint would be to say that perhaps we have, you know, a Yankee bias here, an American bias, because it is cheaper to buy gas here than it is in some other countries. And so maybe in other countries we can see that relationship between gas prices and recoup investment more clearly,
yeah.
You know, maybe in a place that has heavy taxation,
but not
necessarily here.
I understand what you're saying, but I'm going to read a few numbers to you here. Not many, just a few. But there's a couple of examples that come right from the article.
Okay.
And they show the difference between the standard vehicle, the standard gasoline-powered vehicle, mm-hmm. and then the hybrid version of the same vehicle, same year, same make model. So the first one I'll read to you is the Chevy 2009 Chevy Malibu and the Malibu Hybrid. There's a price difference of $2,100, actually more than that, just a little bit. Between the Honda Civic Sedan and the Honda Civic Hybrid, there's a $6,100 difference.
Wow.
And if you go to the Toyota Camry, there's about a $7,000 difference.
$7,000?
2010 Toyota Camry. If you buy the hybrid version, there's a $7,000 difference. And if you go up to the Ford Escape, the hybrid Escape is $11,000 more than the standard hybrid Escape.
$11,000.
$11,000.
You could buy a regular version of that model. Mm-hmm. And another car.
I will. I'll give you an even more extreme example.
Oh, lay it on me.
This is the one. Lexus. Lexus makes a hybrid. You know, Lexus,
right.
The luxury
right.
make model.
Mm-hmm.
They have an LS 600H hybrid, which costs more than $100,000. That's the sticker price. So this is a big time. You know, big
yeah.
luxury vehicle. A big V8 power. Really cool car. With gas prices relatively low, it would take 102.6 years to make up the difference in just fuel savings alone
wow.
on that vehicle. So if you think you're going to own that Lexus for 102.6 years, then uh-huh. maybe you'll break even at that point. That's a good idea. But again, 102.6 years. Now, that's the difference between buying this hybrid vehicle, the 600H hybrid, and an LS 600H, an LS 460L, which apparently is comparable in that arena. So you know, if the prices fall, that time gets even longer. If the prices go up, it becomes less, but you're still talking about, you know, right now about a ballpark 102 years.
That's absolutely nuts. And you know what, I would say that, not to be too much of a party pooper, but I'll see you on gas savings, mm-hmm. and I will raise you maintenance cost to keep, because cars can become more and more expensive to run for that, not even that long, you know.
Oh,
can you imagine?
That's a very good point.
Keeping a car, how much is it going to cost you to keep that Lexus running to the point where you can save gas money?
Yeah.
For even 50 years.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
You know?
Yeah. The car, I mean, look at a car that's 50 years old right now. That car is used in parades
mm-hmm.
and in special events, and you take it out and you take it to the shop to be fixed and then bring it back to your garage and polish it again, right?
Yeah, right,
so,
exactly.
So that's not really a daily driver. It's not something that you continually mm-hmm. gain on, like, you know, like we're talking about. So, you know, these cars where it takes, even let's say, I think we had examples in our earlier podcast, I believe, where the example was like 20 years.
Yes.
And that wasn't terribly uncommon. I mean, I don't know what the dollar amount was. I just forget. But
right.
If it takes 20 years for a car to become, like, I guess, equal or in the black,
yeah.
Man, you've got to be right on top of maintenance to keep it running as if it were the day that it was new, or mm-hmm. the comparable version with a gasoline engine. So I don't know. It's kind of a give and take on this one.
It's a tough calculation, but also, to be fair, clearly when somebody, most people who are purchasing a hybrid, are motivated by other factors, the financial factor is oftentimes seen as icing on the cake,
mm-hmm.
icing exactly. on the cake of environmental concerns, right?
Very good. Yes. Yeah. Nice sum up there. Or summary. Summation.
Summation.
Some.
Oh, you know what? Some all three thing. Of them. My something.
Yeah, that's right. So let's move on.
Let's move on.
We've been talking about money long enough.
Yeah.
Clean diesel gets great gas mileage. So that's a reason. That's you can buy a clean diesel vehicle, and it will get comparable gas mileage to a hybrid vehicle right now.
Now, we haven't talked too much about clean diesel, so just real quick.
That's it's kind of a European style of diesel car and truck. I guess European only because they use a lot of diesel products over there.
Sure.
So, you know, the fuel saving, diesel fuel operated engines are a lot more efficient than a lot of hybrids these days. And I can give you a couple of examples right out of the article again.
Yeah.
If you're looking at highway, now they may not do quite as well in the city as hybrids do, but there's a reason behind that too. On the highway though, the Volkswagen Jetta TDI diesel and the BMW 335D diesel each get 41 and 36 on the highway, respectively. So 41 miles per gallon for the Volkswagen Jetta, 36 miles per gallon for the BMW, and that is that's above all but two of the hybrids that are out there right now, which are the Prius and the Insight.
Oh, I'm gonna start commenting as though you're starting a fight with hybrids. Ready?
Okay, go.
Ooh.
Yeah. No. Listen. Yeah. The diesel vehicles, I guess, get fantastic highway mileage. They get reasonable city mileage. Those two vehicles get 30 and 23 city mileage as well. So that's it's not bad.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason that the hybrid vehicles get better city mileage is because of that electric motor. Now these diesel vehicles that we're talking about, you know, there are diesel hybrid vehicles which are just really efficient, but we're talking about a standard clean diesel engine here.
Mm-hmm.
Those vehicles get great fuel mileage because I'm talking about the hybrids. The
okay,
hybrids
the
get
diesel hybrids.
Just the hybrids in general.
Oh, okay.
They get fantastic city mileage because of the electric motor, and oftentimes they're running without even operating the gasoline.
Oh yeah, because
motor.
It's below that threshold speed, right?
Yeah, that's right. So they're operating at low speed, and a lot of times the gasoline engine doesn't even kick in or whatever.
Right.
So, you know, or it's being assisted by the electric motor, and in that case, you know, it's even more efficient. Or, well, a little bit more efficient, but
still, diesel is you know, I think here in the States, a lot of people have an image of diesel as sort of a dirtier fuel.
Not so.
In fact, my friend.
In a lot of cases, they are they're cleaner. In a lot of cases, and that's because they have particulate filters that it's like an extra filtration system that actually burns off its residue. That's another show, but have we already done that? Maybe we have.
We've done octane.
Might have touched on that.
We've touched on it.
Yeah, we'll have to do something about diesel fuel pretty soon. But they are, you know, they do have that image of being dirty and smelly and noisy.
Mm-hmm.
Not the case anymore.
That is incorrect.
Yep, incorrect. So, you know, check out the EPA numbers on those and you'll find out some surprising things.
Oh, this is good. So far, man, now that we're a little past the midway on this, I am more persuaded by this than I was by reasons to buy.
Oh, are you really? Am I swaying you back and forth on this? Did you really?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Or were you always kind of leaning towards maybe not?
I was, you know, originally before we really started investigating hybrids, I will be honest with you. I wanted one. I thought it was a great idea. I was one of those people that I made a funny voice about earlier.
You can't say those people.
I can't. You're right. I shouldn't, but I did.
You mean hybrid owners?
No. You know what, though? I think a lot of people, again, who are buying hybrids are not worried about what I was thinking. I wanted a hybrid for the wrong reasons.
Oh, I see.
So with utmost support and, you know, continual respect for people mm-hmm. who do plan to buy hybrids. I don't know, maybe number two, maybe number one will change my mind. Maybe it'll get me back on the hybrid team, but let's see, number two.
Back on the hybrid team? I'm telling you reasons not to.
I know, but that's our thing. That's our chemistry is that, you know, I'll just run out and disagree
with
you impulsively. All
right, just whatever I say, you're just going to say no. All right, fuel economy depends on driving style. That's number two. Fuel economy depends on driving style. So let's say they get a hybrid.
Okay.
And it gets good city mileage, better than it does on the highway.
Sure.
However, you got a heavy foot.
You got the lead foot.
Yep. And you're continually using not using the electric motor, but you're using the gasoline motor to start, you know, the jackrabbit starts from the light, et cetera.
Yeah.
You're using a smaller engine to try to go faster. It's not going to work anyways, but you're going to end up burning through more fuel than you would have if you had done, you know, of course, a slow starter, or if you'd had a standard vehicle with a standard gasoline-powered engine and just taking it easy on the fuel. That's kind of the gist of that, is that, you know, your driving style.
That's a really good point.
Also, you got to remember that, you know, the city driving, it's critical for hybrid owners and their mileage numbers, I guess. They have to be able to have that element of it. Otherwise, if they're doing all highway driving, they're not going to see the return that they thought they were on this. They're not going to get the mileage that they thought.
That's a good point.
It's less on the highway in many cases. There may be one out there now that I don't really know. I have to look into it and find out what the latest EPA numbers are. But really, hybrids are fantastic around the city. On the highway, to a point, they're not as good.
Mm-hmm. And to your point, it really does depend. Mm-hmm. Somebody cannot jump out of a Mustang and then jump into a smaller model hybrid and expect to drive the same way with
correct.
The same results.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing is that, and I don't mean to say that, you know, they're bad on the highway. I don't mean that at all.
Right.
But my point is that you can get a comparable vehicle, if you're looking for a small, efficient vehicle that gets reasonable city mileage and fantastic mm-hmm. highway mileage. You can get a Smart for Two. That's the example that was used in the article, I believe. And the Smart for Two, now this is just gasoline-powered car. It's not a hybrid. It gets 41 miles per gallon on the highway. And that's, you know, the EPA numbers. So you can probably get more if you were to stretch it. Mm-hmm. But that's better than all but the top two of the hybrids, again, the Prius and the Insight. So
yeah.
Reasonable. And that's just a standard engine vehicle with, gasoline power. Two-seater, of course.
Right,
Smart for Two, but
that's a disadvantage.
But again, I mean, you're not talking about paying that premium up front for the hybrid technology. How you feeling?
I'm feeling. I'm going to withhold judgment. take me to the top of the mountain.
The
here,
last
man.
One, and
yeah.
This one may hit you because you drive that big plush Monte Carlo, don't you?
I do, and I enjoy it. And they will take the keys from my cold dead hands, or from the hands that are not okay. holding a set of hybrid keys. So
I understand. All right. Well, maybe this will change your mind then.
All right.
Fewer creature comforts. So you buy a hybrid.
Uh-huh.
You're not sitting in the lap of luxury like you would be in your Monte Carlo.
It is a comfortable car.
I bet it is.
You know, it's basically a lazy boy on wheels.
That's very nice. That's a good way to. It's a good way to look at it. Like you're driving a big couch down the road, right?
Kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
So wait. Go back over this, though. You're talking about, now I don't have a super nice car. You know, mm-hmm. I don't have heated leather seats. I don't have, mm-hmm. you know, I don't have preset adjustments for the drivers and stuff. But that probably doesn't happen.
Well, that's not happening in a hybrid car either. So maybe you're equal match here. But when you pay, remember we said that there's a premium you pay for hybrid vehicles.
Yes.
So you think that you'd have a loaded vehicle if you're paying, you know, $7,000 or $11,000 more for this vehicle. Not the case, because you're paying for the technology.
You're purely paying for the technology, for the nuts and bolts of it.
You're paying for the development of the technology, and you're paying for
right.
So they're making up the cost that it cost the corporation to build that vehicle.
I see.
You're making that up vehicle by vehicle when you purchase it.
You're making up R&D, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And so you're paying for the technology. You're not paying for the extra luxuries. Mm. Not to say that you can't get things like that in the hybrid vehicles, but you're going to pay additional for those on top of that premium that you already pay. So you can get, you know, the leather steering wheel, and you can also get the leather seats, and you can get the, I don't know, heated and cooled seats, whatever you want. But it's going to cost you a lot more.
I think that's a very, very sad thing to hear. Go ahead. No.
Oh, sorry. No. I was just going to say that they also have they also have fuel difference. So, you know, you've got that big solid fuel probably in your car. I bet it's a pretty sturdy road car, right?
Yeah, you can hear it when you can hear it purr, and then it also has, you know, it can take a bump pretty well. Mm-hmm. It has that. Remember when we were talking about luxury cars, how there's a certain silence that comes on when you close the door?
Yes.
I'm happy to say that car has that.
Oh, very good. Very good. Might not be the case in a hybrid. Because it's all about the efficiency and all about the technology that's involved in it right now. Mm-hmm. Now there's, you know, examples of, you know, like the Lexus that we're talking about. Of course, it's going to be silent inside.
Yeah.
It's going to be whisper quiet, I guess. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of other cars that are similar, you know, that are you know, a little bit more on the quiet side, but for the most part, they're going to have a different feel on the road, and that's because they often have smaller tires, which are harder tires as well, because of those the low rolling resistance tires,
right?
And that's for, you know, additional mileage. Everything's about efficiency, so they're a harder compound than some of the softer tires that you'll find on sports cars or sedans, even.
Sure.
There's also idle stop technology, which may take, depends on the system, the car that you have, but that may take a little getting used to, because there are times when that can feel, and I don't have the experience with this, but they
feel like the car's turned off.
Yeah, it's like it can be, you can feel it turn on and off, and if that's something that's upsetting to you, you know, that may be something that takes time to adjust to. Other ones are smoother, but yeah.
You're gonna enjoy this. Mm-hmm. So I think I mentioned earlier that my mom purchased a hybrid. My mom and dad did, and mm-hmm. It's been sort of my mom's vehicle. It's her daily ride, you know?
Yeah.
And that is one of the things that freaked her out the most for 3 to 4 days. Every time she went to a stoplight or a stop sign, she kind of thought that the engine was dead.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Even though the dealer warned her.
Well, all the old cars that I've had, if you pull up to a light and you don't hear anything, there's something wrong. So that's probably what she's thinking about, is that, you know, those older vehicles where, you know, you stop and suddenly the engine stops, you're in trouble.
I have a point that is not on this list that I think should be on this list.
Okay.
And then I have a little question for you, but first let's go into this, because I really want your opinion on this. The one aspect of hybrid technology currently that really... Because all of this, I've been slightly facetious, these 5 points are good points, but there are counter arguments, and we've examined some of those earlier in the earlier episode. But to me, the big deal here is that if, as we said, people are buying hybrid vehicles because they are concerned about the environment more so than they are about saving money, we've kind of implicitly accepted that in our argument, then one thing that's escaping us is that hybrid vehicles make up for their use, make up for their efficiency with gas by using electricity. And in the United States, like we talked about this off air, mm-hmm. our electric plants are coal powered.
Yeah.
So if you think about it, these cars are in some ways coal and gas powered cars.
Sure, coal powered cars. Yeah.
Do you think I'm going too far with
No, I agree. I mean, that's a debate that's ongoing right now, is that how much electricity is this going to take to operate this? Now, there's ways to make clean electricity.
Right.
There's hydropower. There's also nuclear power.
Sure. Solar power.
Yeah, you can do solar power. That's less. And there's wind power. I mean, there's all kinds of ways to make electricity. Yeah, for the most part, a lot of the, at least here in the United States, a lot of, and I forget the percentage, but there's a real high percentage of the factories where the electricity comes from, the plants, that are coal-fired. And, you know, why do you think you see all those trains with just car after car after car of,
right.
of coal coming out of, you know, Kentucky and Tennessee and, you know, those areas? It's still vital for, you know, everything to operate, everything to work. So, yeah, in a way, I guess these cars are coal and gasoline powered, really, if you want to get right back down to it.
Well, because of, I guess, the origin of it, and you know, I freely admit that in places where the coal is not the element powering the plants, mm-hmm. as you've mentioned, alternative energy makes it a completely different argument.
Yeah, it's highly efficient in that case. Yeah.
In that case, I've got one question for you before we close this out.
Okay.
All right. I know that you don't think hybrids are going to save the world, Scott. Let's just be upfront about that.
Yeah.
What would it take for you to buy a hybrid vehicle?
You know, I think that it would take the performance aspect to come back in. We talked about that, I think, in the last
yes.
episode.
Yeah.
That Honda, what I call it, a
CRZ.
CRZ, yeah. Something like that. And I think once that vehicle arrives, hopefully there'll be more that are like that. You know, there'll be some competition, and it'll just start to go up from there. You know, the horsepower will go up. The 0-60 times will go up. The mm-hmm. materials that they use will be lighter and faster. And I don't know. I just think there's going to be something good about competition in that arena, in that performance arena. And hopefully, you know, hybrid vehicles will become, you know, not only more efficient at the same time, they'll also be better performers.
You know, in the all-electric vehicle field, that works pretty well for Tesla.
Yeah, those are unbelievably quick cars.
Greased lightning.
Yeah, they are, but they're all electric, and that's the point. Is that, you know, they're all electric, so they use just electric motors, and they're very they've got a lot of torque.
Yeah,
a very torquey motor, and it's instantly available. Now with a hybrid car, you know, you've got a small electric motor and a small gas motor, so that's the problem, is that trade off. Now if you make a bigger gasoline motor, then what's the point of having a hybrid motor at all?
Right, and if you
make it a bigger electric motor, what's the point of having the gasoline part of that, unless it's just to charge the battery for the electric motor? So in a way, that would make sense. But, you know, then again, you're carrying around the extra weight of, let's say, a half-liter gasoline-powered engine. So
right.
There's a lot of trade-offs, but the electric, all-electric thing, those cars are pretty quick.
So for you, it would have to be performance.
I think so. Yeah. What about you? What's the what would be the turning point for you? What would make you want to buy a hybrid car?
Really, we already live in the city, so for me, if the price was comparable from the offset, if the price was comparable, excuse me there.
No, I got it.
I think that would make me consider buying a hybrid. But the problem is, you know, given the upfront cost, given the time it takes to recoup that cost, and given the, again, I think I mentioned this in an earlier episode, the fact that it is new technology. It's new technology that is quickly evolving, so it has a good point in that we know that it will improve, but also has a negative point in that we know, you know, it's going to be, okay, you know how when you buy a computer, you can pretty much bet that 2.5 years from now, that computer is going to be considered old.
Yeah, 2.5 months.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that in hybrid technology, we're getting into that sort of cycle.
Yeah.
So that's, if I knew that I could get something that would be solid, would be around a long time, and would cost about the same as an internal combustion.
Well, the insight is getting close to that with that 19.8 intro price.
Yeah,
but you're getting the bare bones model there, and there's not much frill to that one at all. There's not much there. You have to upgrade from that point, which would, you know, increases the cost, of course. But I mean, one other quick thing that I'll mention is the styling. I know why they're styled the way they are. They have to be aerodynamic. Everything about them is about efficiency.
Sure. Yeah.
And I mean, I just can't get over the current design, because to me, and I know a lot of people argue with this, but they all look the same for the most part.
That's true.
It's tough to differentiate them on the road. I mean, other than there's some that, you know, the Camry looks just like the regular Camry, I guess. That's different. But the Insight and the Prius, they have a very similar look to me, and I can't tell the difference between the generations of those. It's really tough. But once they get to the point where, you know, the style becomes a little more important, it can still be aerodynamic, but I don't know. I'm just not crazy about the look of them right now.
Well, what if they named a model after you? What if they came out with a hybrid called the GM Scott Benjamin?
I don't even know where to go with that. That's crazy.
I know where to go. How about listener mail?
Sounds good.
All right. So, Scott, we have a listener mail here from Tim. And Tim is kind of a globetrotter, and he's writing about the survival kit thing we did earlier.
Wait, he's a globetrotter?
I would call them a Globetrotter.
Awesome. I saw those guys in the 1970s. Oh. They were really, really cool. I remember Metterlark, Lemon, Curly, those guys. Is that what you're talking about? Red, white, and blue basketball?
You know what? I am not going to say it's impossible, because although we do not talk about the Globetrotters of basketball, perhaps is my error, I meant to shout out Tim for the fact that he has lived in Michigan, Italy, Luxembourg, and Phoenix. I'm assuming Phoenix, Arizona.
Oh, that's way different.
You know what, though? Don't give him a hard time.
No, that's good. I'm still good. I was just excited that we had a Globetrotter right now.
I know. Maybe one day. But right now, I think Tim's got a pretty excellent letter. He actually, very politely, pointed out that we might have had our wires crossed when we were talking about cold or hot weather in a survival situation. Because we talked about the... that poor, unfortunate family up there in the Northwest. And then we talked about, you know, having the candle trick if you're in cold weather and stuff.
Yes.
And so Tim points out that he has been stranded at least a day in all the places he's lived. And in Italy and Luxembourg, he was able to walk somewhere over a couple nights during the winter. He had warm clothes. He was able to drink snow. And... He made it out. He even spent 4 days trying to find a road one time.
4 days?
Uh-huh.
And, wow.
But by contrast, he says, when he was living in Phoenix, and it must be Arizona, he was stranded in the desert outside Yuma for 2 days in August, and the temperature could even hit 115+. And he had clothes, extra gas, 2 liters of water, and he still had to go to the hospital for sun poisoning and dehydration.
Oh, my gosh. So here's a guy he's really prepared. He's totally prepared.
Yeah, he's got a good kit.
And he's saying that heat is worse than cold, which kind of counteracts what we said. We figured, we were just surmising, I guess, that that cold weather would be better to be stranded in than hot weather. Is that right? We said hot weather.
We said hot weather would be better.
Yeah, we said hot weather. He says cold.
Well, I think one of the things we were assuming the shade, but he makes a really good point there about the dehydration, and he also talks about how the heat there is just vicious, man. Apparently, a kid dropped dead during football practice because of exposure.
Oh man!
So to our listeners out there who are in the very hot environments. Of the U.S. and other places, again, please exercise caution.
Yep, be ready.
Yeah, and thank you to Tim for writing in.
Yeah, no kidding. It's eye-opening. I didn't know that it was that... it seems like it's that much more dangerous than cold weather, but I guess both of them have their own perils.
Yeah, there's always that saying people have, you know, in the South versus the desert here in the States about, you know, it's a different kind of heat or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's still heat.
No, it's hot. I don't care if it's humid or not humid, but man, it's hot. It's just like opening an oven.
It really is. I guess that wraps us up here for today. Again, thanks, Tim, and to our listeners. Thanks for lending us an ear. If you guys have any questions or any suggestions for another topic, please send us an email at highspeedstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com. And be sure to check out the High Speed Stuff blog on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage.